Ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to this, the Game 4 edition of the Cheaters Never Win Hockey Podcast, section328.com, your home for everything Carolina Hurricanes hockey, a little tailgating, a little snark. And we're doing all of this because rumor has it the Canes are getting some new fans and folks are jumping on the bandwagon, Derek.
What? A Canes bandwagon?
It's shocking what a Game 3 ass waxing can do.
And let us be very clear. We welcome bandwagon fans.
Yes, we welcome everybody.
You have to get new fans at some point. Not everyone can be a fan from the same day that everybody else is.
Not every team is an arbitrary six team.
Right. If you want the Canes to win, welcome.
Yeah. Welcome, you guys. Welcome to the new listeners. Welcome to the new fans. Welcome to everybody. This is the sixth, seventh season, something like that, of the Cheaters Never Win podcast, the reigning, defending, longest-running podcast champion of Raleigh. We have some guests. We have some beer.
I don't know about that first part, Mike. Let's keep this above board.
What, we have guests?
It was the one before that.
The reigning defending.
Let's keep on moving.
Okay. So thank you guys for coming. Two great guests tonight. Jam-packed episode. Guest number one, the one, the only, the man who lived the aftermath for all of those years and now gets to be on Fox Sports Carolina. I kind of feel bad that Mikey doesn't get a chance to be on the aftermath now and actually enjoy some of this, Derek.
I wonder how different it would be.
I don't know, because we have an aftermath now, and John Forslund is on there, and that part is good. But we welcome on Mike Maniscalco from Fox Sports Carolinas, from your Fox pregame and your end of the game on the bench interviewer. So
that is when, of course, he can hear the player, and the player can hear him.
Yeah, more on that when we talk to Mike momentarily. Also, Greg Young from Japers Rink, the SB Nation blog that covers the Washington Capitals, was on with us to do a little cross-brand promotion, so that way we could get a little bit of a feel for how Caps fans are feeling right about now.
Hashtag synergy.
Ooh, wow, it's like you work in social media or something.
Or any corporate environment in America.
Derek, what else are we talking about tonight?
I believe tonight we are going to talk about, I think there was a pugilistic endeavor that happened in Game 3. I don't know if you heard anything about it.
It was
may have been a couple notable players.
Yes.
Okay, we're going to talk a little bit about that. We're going to talk about Games 1 through 3, kind of buzz through those a little bit. We will be answering your cheat mail questions. Of course, I'll be reviewing a beer that you can go get at Bottle Mix. And we're going to talk about the tailgate that's happening Thursday, Game 4, today. So stick around to the end. You'll get all the details about that tailgate. And we hope to see so many of your beautiful faces in the parking lot.
Oh, yeah. And Derek, before we can get to that parking lot, before we can get to the rest of this, I need you to do me a favor.
What's that?
Hit that damn X button.
Oh, yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this, the Game 4 edition of the Cheaters Never Win podcast. My name's Mike.
I'm Derek.
And we are still a proud part of the Sports Channel 8 Podcast Network. Still brought to you by the good folks at Over a Bottle Mix. They keep us lubricated. And the Caniac _ Realtor. She keeps roofs over your head. Or maybe removes the roof from your head if she sells your house.
I was like, that sounds terribly cruel. I don't think Dawn would do that.
No. But still looking for somebody to complete the 328 sponsorship trifecta, wearing a piece of the merch, hashtag buy the merch, section328.com/store. Go and take a picture of yourself wearing the merch, drinking a bottle mixed beer inside of the new house that you just bought from Dawn, or in the front yard of the house you just had Dawn sell.
Yes, or it could be a bottle of wine from Bottle Mix.
It could.
But do all three. We will figure something out for you.
I'll find you a playoff ticket.
Look at there.
There you go. Just one. And it's going to be a really bad seat. But they're all really bad seats because the Canes...
Obstructed view. You're up in the rafters with Sting.
The Canes are absolutely filling the building. Congratulations to all of you, the Canes fans. I think Dougie Hamilton said it best. There was times on the ice where you absolutely could not hear each other. It was the best environment he had ever played in. He played in an arbitrary six city in Boston. I believe they were part of the arbitrary six.
And it's arbitrary.
Yeah.
So.
Also played in a Canadian town of Calgary. So we know Boston is always better in Calgary, or hockey's always better in Calgary and Boston. So, you know, we have to have something special here, right, Derek?
I would like to think so. That atmosphere was fantastic. So at the tailgate before game three, we took a picture of all the people who were out with us who had never attended a playoff game. We called them the playoff virgins. We took a picture, and it was dozens of them. There were more playoff virgins than there are never nudes. And I think all of them cannot wait to come back. I know I had been telling my wife for years, I want to take you to a Carolina Hurricanes playoff game. And I tried to tell her how much better it is, how different it is. But I kept saying, too, my words can never do this justice, right? And I hyped it up, and I hyped it up, and I hyped it up. And as soon as she got in the building and saw the towels everywhere and heard everybody losing their ever-loving minds before the puck even dropped, she's like, I can't wait for Thursday.
Yeah. And we can get louder, too. You know, building reached about 112.
I think it was 113. 112, I saw Mike 113. Foreman retweeted.
I want to say the building record's right around 121.
So, and I think someone said 124 when the empty netter hit in Game 7 in 06.
So, we've got a little bit of ways to go, Caniacs. Bring your voice. Bring everything. And be prepared to fight on Thursday night.
Mike, I just heard the glass, and if I know one thing from watching years of Stone Cold Steve Austin, it's when you hear that glass, it's your ass.
By God. By God. By God, that's Andre Svechnikov's music. He was stunning Steve for a time. So, Derek, question for you. I'm just going to let this roll, because this is getting jacked up. Is at this point in Andre Svechnikov's career, is he more stunning Steve than he is Stone Cold?
Yeah.
Explain for the people who, you know, don't realize that we do.
Because he's not a world champion yet. That's the biggest reason. I'm not going to go into the fact that he used the stun gun or various other finishing maneuvers or the Hollywood Blondes or any of that. But yeah, he's more stunning Steve. He's still a young pup. He's still learning the way that things work. So, I don't know how much of the analysis of the fight or the pre-fight or any of that you want to get into here, Mike.
Okay, so, well, let's talk a little bit about what Rod Brind'Amour said, right? Let's talk a little bit about how, was this fight fair from the get-go, right? Should have this even been a fight at all? Do you believe Hall of Famer and future Coach of the Year Rod Brind'Amour? Or do you believe a dirty, filthy Ruski who's been known to take cheap shots all throughout his playoff career?
So that question's really loaded because, one, Rod...
Wait. Are you accusing me of having a loaded question?
Yes.
Okay, good.
And I'm also accusing the questioner of being loaded.
Soon. Soon.
Can confirm? I think if you go back and watch the video, it looks like two guys who agreed to a fight. And I don't, maybe Ovechkin's gloves came off a little first, but it wasn't like it was a cheap shot thing. Like, someone's gloves are going to come off first unless they just miraculously choreograph things and the gloves come off at the exact same time. But fists were flying back and forth. Ovechkin weighs 40 pounds more, as we talk about later, has that dad strength, and it was an unfortunate outcome to a fight. So, I don't know. I'm inclined to believe both guys equally.
Yeah. It was a horrible outcome to what I thought was a great and maybe even greatly timed fight. Andre Svechnikov had had enough, and he decided that he was going to take Alex Ovechkin off the ice for 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Team was up 1-0 at that point. And could have absolutely been, you know, the type of thing that brought momentum. Now, here's what it did. It galvanized the bench. It galvanized the locker room. And those guys went out there and played harder for each other maybe than they have all season. Mm-hmm. But we wish our boy Svech nothing but the best. Hope he comes back phenomenally. I've got a lot more angina over Ovi leaving his feet for hits than I do anything that happened in that fight. Some folks will say, you know, the extra hit on the way down. There was a little part of me that says, was he trying to actually hold Andre and not have him bump it? And, you know, you can go all Zapruder film on it and break it out.
I also think that it was like, you know, maybe he didn't realize that that last punch knocked him out and he was just throwing one more, and the momentum of throwing a punch to a face that isn't there threw him forward.
I don't know.
I also couldn't balance on skates, so I'm probably a terrible person.
Here's the thing, too. Ovechkin hasn't earned the benefit of the doubt in the playoffs yet.
No. And he had been goading Svechnikov into doing something stupid. Whether that was a fight or just taking a stupid retaliation penalty, he had been doing his best to get under Svechnikov's skin through the first two games.
You know, to talk a little bit about more of the first two games and everything that happened on and off the ice in Game 3, let's go to tonight's very special guest on the Caniac Realtor guest line.
This is Don Meyer with Fathom Realty, official realtor of Section 328. You can find me at becauseitshome.com. I am as passionate about helping you make your next move as I am about the Carolina Hurricanes. On average, homes sold by my firm sell 78 days quicker than other homes on the MLS, getting money in your pocket sooner. Buyers also get exclusive strategic representation in the seller's market. Contact me at becauseitshome.com to learn more.
Derek, on the line, back on the line, the man on the bench, the man who got to hear the loudest roar in, dare I say, 13 years. You know him as the host, the talent on Canes Cast. He's on Fox Sports Carolinas, and I believe he's actually the talent there too. Shane Willis, he is the brawn, the one, the only, Mike Maniscalco. Mr. Maniscalco, first question, how in the hell could you and Warren actually hear yourself with that roar on Monday night?
I will be honest, we didn't, because I said the question, he looked at me and goes, I can't hear you. And so I had to, you know, I had to lean in, and he said something else, and I saw him mouthing the words, I can't hear you. I couldn't actually hear his voice. That was, as far as environments go, the best I've been in for a playoff game ever. It was incredible. And look, it stinks that it took so long for the playoffs to return to Raleigh, but man, oh man, was that not the best environment that you guys have been in, at least in the past decade? And you know, all cards on the table, I'm just the humble host, Michael Smith. The Web's Michael Smith is the talent on Canes Cast, and let's face it, Shane Willis has 20 in the show. That's definitely talent. So I'm just happy to be here and happy to be talking to you guys.
Well, I'll give Shane the credit on NHL goals scored and perhaps more coiffed hair. I might give him the edge on that
one,
yes,
too. Oh, yes, definitely.
So, yeah, I mean, it was incredible to see, and I think it speaks volumes to the environment that was created in that building on Monday, that there were so many playoff first-timers. I mean, roughly half of our tailgate that was out there had never been to a playoff game in person.
Virgins!
And, I mean, I don't know if you've seen what the ticket market is looking like for Thursday's game, but it's nuts. The cheapest pair of tickets this afternoon was like $600 or so. I mean, that is nuts, and I didn't expect Raleigh to embrace playoff hockey after 10 years so quickly. I thought it might have taken a round. What did you expect from Canes fans in this market?
Well, you know, I can do the pander and say exactly how it played out, but I think when you have a base that had been denied for so long something that they wanted, but they also remembered, and you guys have been part of this, there is this core group of fans that have just stuck by this team come hell or high water, that I knew that group was going to be there no matter what in doing whatever it takes to make that environment great. The fact that it was not just that unbelievable environment, but you got the unbelievable game from the Carolina Hurricanes. That was one of the best games, if not the best game, that team played all season, save a few things that I'm sure we're going to talk about. But it was one of those things, you put those two combinations together, and for the folks who were there and might have just said, oh, I'm only going to buy tickets for game three for the return, and then remember how much fun it is to have your backside in that arena, that drives up the cost for this. So a little surprised, but not totally surprised that everybody has run back to playoff hockey here in the Triangle. But, you know, there's enough people who do remember 06 and the cup run and the fun of 09 making it to the Eastern Conference Finals, and I think they just needed to be reminded of it. And man, what a way to be reminded of it on Monday night. That was just a fantastic game all the way around, with, of course, said exception, I'm setting it up for you guys to go there.
Yeah, absolutely. Mike, and I what we all know is after the first period, the Canes were down two leading forwards, and both Michael Ferland and Andrei Svechnikov. So if you like it, you can take it. If you don't, you can send it right back. Andrei Svechnikov makes a Bill Russell-like return before the end of this playoff series to help the Canes clinch.
You know, I'm going to keep it, but it's not because of any inside knowledge that we have other than what Rod Brindamore told us is, you know, they saw Andrei Svechnikov the other day. As a matter of fact, he was around the team today, and he's going through the concussion protocol. And to say that he dodged a bullet, I can't say that because he received a concussion and it looks pretty bad. But there was thought that it was going to be a lot more severe than what it is. I can't speak to the degree or and nor do I want to. I'm not a doctor, although I have played one on TV a long time ago. That being said, it's a situation where I think if this gets to a game seven, Andrei Svechnikov will do whatever he possibly can to be on the ice for that. It doesn't mean that I know that he's going to be cleared or anything like that, but I'm fairly certain that as soon as he gets the green light, he'll be able to play. And as long as he rebounds and makes it through the protocol okay, the Canes will put him back in the lineup.
So I'll stick with lineup questions for you. For tomorrow's game, I heard Brindamore say in his press availability today that Calvin DeHaan is medically cleared, but it's still a, you know, can he play at the high level that the playoffs demand? And, you know, with an eye injury, I can only imagine the different variables that come into that. Whether or not he draws in, sounds like Patrick Brown might play. Who do you think slots into the lineup on Thursday's game for, you know, depending if DeHaan's not available and assuming both Ferland and Svechnikov are not going to play?
Well, Derek, the only question is if Calvin DeHaan says he can go and his injury is not related to his eye. So that's the good thing. It comes down to, does Rod Brindamore want to run seven defensemen and 11 forwards? Because I don't think that they would put DeHaan in with an injury or coming back from an injury and not knowing if he can make it all the way through the game. So I think that Hayden Fleury will stay in the game no matter what if that happens. And then the question is, which forward doesn't play? And that would probably be Patrick Brown, who doesn't play if you're going to just run 11 forwards out there. But who slots in and where they slot in today at practice, Greg McKegg was centering a fourth line with Saku Menelainen and with Patrick Brown. You had Warren Fogle, he of the two-goal game on Monday night. He slid up to Andrei Svechnikov's spot on the line with Justin Williams and Jordan Staal. And then you had a third line of Lucas Walmark with Jordan Martinook. And on the other side of that, Brock McGinn. Top line remained the same. It wasn't changed. Sebastian Aho with Teuvo Teravainen and Nino Niederreiter. So that, I think, is going to be the lineup that you're going to see with Calvin DeHaan. Maybe a game time decision, but I wouldn't also be surprised if we see Calvin DeHaan before this series is over because he's been cleared by the doctors. Now it's just a matter of does he feel good enough to get in there and make a difference, like you said. Because playoff hockey is way different, Derek, than what we see in the regular season from the intensity, not just, you know, the pace of it, but how much more physical. And we've certainly seen that in this series.
Yeah, not only the physicality, but I think the speed. It really felt like the Canes' speed finally got the best of the Caps on Monday night. For my money, of the nine periods played, I would put the Canes, you know, as the better team in seven of the nine periods. And that kind of what worries me about the speed factor for some of these guys who are coming up, particularly Patrick Brown. Is there any concern that with this change in the lineup and maybe the deceleration from the lack of speedy guys that the team's going to have to change their pace of play a little bit while these other guys are getting their feet underneath of them?
No, not at all, Michael. I think they're going to play the exact same way. And I'll give you the I know it's weird, the brevity answer on this one, but they won't change how they play. They won't change how they play at all.
They are who we thought they were. They are who they thought they were.
Exactly. And the Canes are not going to let them off the hook. So, no, there won't be any change to the pace of play or how this team wants to play.
I mean, Mike, do you have a, if you like it, if you take it, if you not, send it back. I mean, this is generally the part where Smitty has to go and check the internet and see if somebody fed him something. So if you need Derek to tap dance for a minute while you look for something on the internet like Smitty does, we're happy to do that.
Oh, no. I have many. I mean, it just depends on which way you want to go.
We're here.
So, All right. Well, mine for you is before this series is over, Sebastian Aho will have 3 more goals.
Oh, I'm taking that all day long because the Canes have 3 more games to win. Sebastian Aho, I believe, will absolutely have a 2-goal game. One of those goals will be an empty net goal. But Sebastian Aho is that guy who is defensively reliable on the ice at the end of a game that has the speed to separate himself. So I think Sebastian Aho will absolutely score himself an empty netter, which means he only has to pot 2. And since he's having a 2-goal game, I absolutely think that, yes, I will take that. I will hold it. I will put it in my pocket. I'll put it in my front pocket so it doesn't get sweaty in my back pocket. Because I think that highly of what you just presented me with, Mike.
Yeah, I'll send it back.
Dr. Wrestler, do you agree with that?
No, I'm going to send that one back to you because I think he'll get 2 goals because El Nino has not yet struck. So I think that's where that's going to go. I think the top line will get some points, but Aho's going to get probably 2 assists more, but I don't think he's going to get 3 more goals. So that's where I'll send that one. Another lineup question for you because I know you said that you don't think they're going to change the way they play. Can they change how they play and give Dougie all the power play time?
They could, but you know, I know that this has been a horse that has been much, much, much beaten, and especially into the ground. They're not going to do it now. The one message, guys, and this is where the players have all of the respect for Rod Brind'Amour, is he's never come off of it. He's never come off of his message. He's never moved a guy just for the sake of moving him. There's always been some kind of reasoning behind it. He was even asked about it today in his press conference about, you know, did you show how the quote unquote second power play unit plays to the first? He said, yep. And he goes, and we've done it before. And basically what it just comes down to is he feels that the first unit just gets a little bit too cute with the puck because, you know, when you have talented players, they're always thinking they can make one more play. And get from there. But I get your point, and I understand the angst this year that some people have had with this, but no, it's not going to change now. If it hasn't changed by now, it's not going to change in the playoffs, Derek.
So, Mike, we're going to get to the Bill Burniston portion of the podcast. Thanks for listening, Bill. You spent a couple of days in D.C. You're getting ready to go back there for Game 5. What is the absolute worst dog crap food that you've been served in D.C., and why is it the worst city in the nation to be visiting for a hockey game?
Well, because nobody's actually from there, and nobody actually understands the game of hockey. They're all, you know, just kind of coming in, and what they're seeing for the first time is all new. Is that good enough for you?
No, but bad food. Have you hit bad food in D.C.? And you could say,
it's called the press meal.
I was gonna say you could say the hot dog cart. As long as you didn't say the Irish Channel, we'd be okay with anything.
No, it's called the press meal, and I'll just leave it at that because I am going back up there. And if this gets caught, I don't want the dog's breakfast to show up in my plate, even though it will anyway. So
I will say there is a great drinking and eating establishment called Blue Jacket down by the Nationals Park. That's a great place in D.C. Mike, related to Flanagan's question here for you, we did get an F. Mary Kill of food cities.
Okay.
This one may be tough for you because I know your affinity for at least one of them. F. Mary Kill food cities, Nashville, Montreal, and Dallas.
Ooh, that's good. I like this.
Oh, wow. All right. I'm going to, I will have carnal relations with Nashville. I will marry Montreal, and I will have to sadly kill Dallas.
I think that's the right answer.
That's the only right answer because they don't have barbecue in Dallas. Regardless of what anybody says, maybe in Austin, not in Dallas. Folks, you know him. He is at Mike Maniscalco over on the Twitters. You can follow all of the great stuff from Fox Sports Carolina as they are Canes on at Canes on FSCR. And he will be on your televisions for the next, dare I say, 1.5 months as the Canes continue to progress toward Lord Stanley's Cup. Mike, last question for us. Which sweep were you more surprised by? Tampa or Pittsburgh?
I'm more surprised by Tampa. We can all do the, in retrospect, oh, I saw this coming. I'm not surprised that Columbus beat Tampa. I'm surprised they swept them. Pittsburgh, they just look like that's a team that had a lot of miles on that tire, and they didn't have anything left. But to tell me that Columbus was going to sweep Tampa Bay, I wouldn't have believed that. If you would have told me Columbus finds a way to push it to seven games and it puts all the pressure on Tampa, that I would have bought, but not the sweep. I do actually have one thing I want to send back to you guys before we go. And I want to do this just purely from you guys can, you know, go fan on this as much as you want. And it's about Alex Ovechkin. And it's the only thing that has really bothered me that's come out of this series. And it goes back to the Brock McGinn hit. How come every other hit has been magnified in this series, but that hit has not been? And I'm asking, you guys can go full fan on this one, but, you know, after game two, when people are talking about Dougie Hamilton's elbow to Evgeny Kuznetsov, which, you know, that happened. There's not denying it. And, of course, the Michael Ferland hit, which didn't happen the way that the refs see it, or at least saw it for that game. All those things happened, but how come there was no outrage for the Ovechkin hit, which he did like he's done millions of times in his career, where he launched himself off of his skates and made contact with another player's head? That just conveniently was missed. That's the only thing that's bothered me about this series so far. Not even the fight with Andrei Svechnikov, just that thing that just kind of conveniently just got tucked away and nobody wanted to bring that up.
Mike, here's my take on it. And I'm sure Derek will have a take. When I look at it like this, when you've murdered 10,000 people, when they find out you've murdered 10,001, no one really gets up in arms, right? Because you murdered 10,001, you murdered the 10,000 in the first person, just like you murdered the rest. And that's kind of what Alex Ovechkin has done his entire playoff career. Have a lot of respect for the guy. He's probably the greatest goal scorer I will ever see. When it comes to the playoffs, he plays a cheap, dirty, off-his-skates brand of hockey. And that has nothing to do with the Svechnikov fight. Derek and I are going to talk about that on other portions of the podcast. I don't think that was a bad outcome. I don't necessarily think it was a bad fight or anything bad came of that. I agree with you that Alex Ovechkin is a moneymaker for this league. And much like guys like Sidney Crosby and much like, you know, all of the other stars in this league, they're not going to pull him out of their primary moneymaker of the year, because regardless of how much we enjoy the sport is a business.
Yeah, I think it's a combination of first period at home and 8 Rocket Richard trophies. It's just, I think it's as simple as that.
Okay. And I'm asking, and again, what Michael just said, I agreed with about, you know, he's maybe the best goal scorer of our generation. Derek, you kind of echoed on that. And that's the only thing to come out of this, because people like to latch on to stories. But coming out of that game, I'm just like, how come nobody brought up that hit? It's, you know, did we not see it? Did I make that up? And that's the only thing that can sometimes with national stories bother me. With how things are perceived. But overall, this has been one hell of a playoff series, boys. I'm glad that you had me on, and if you need anything else, you have my number.
We look forward to talking to you in the second round when the Carolina Hurricanes get the chance to try to skate through mud in Barclays Center as they take on the New York Long Islanders. If we put it out there in the ether, Mike, it already has to happen. Until next time, Mikey, we'll talk to you soon. Tune in on your TVs, folks. Find him there. Thanks, Maniscalco.
Thank you, gentlemen.
The fact that he calls us gentlemen at the end of the interview always cracks me up.
He knows us a lot better than that.
Yeah, he's seen us at our worst and seen us at our really, really worst. So thanks, Mike, as always, for taking a little bit of time out. And thanks to Smitty for allowing us to borrow your podcast partner. We look forward to Cheaters Ever Cane Cast somewhere in the mid-July timeframe.
I think this collaborative podcast between us and Kane's Cast, or competitive podcast, depending on how you want to view it,
we're still the champs,
is quickly becoming the spaghetti incident of Raleigh-based Carolina Hurricane-centric podcasts.
There's going to be spaghetti there?
Do you not get the reference?
I get the reference.
Okay.
Just busted your chops.
Okay.
So, Derek, let's talk a little bit about Game 4. Thursday night. Uh-huh. Most of the folks who are listening to this podcast might be listening to it in the gym, getting hyped at lunch, on the way actually to PNC Arena to join the Section 328 tailgate. Everybody stick around for all of the details at the end of the podcast, including some additional special sponsors who are bringing out some goodies. So definitely stay tuned for that. Derek, what do you expect once we actually pack up the tailgate Thursday night and make our way into PNC Arena for Game 4?
First of all, it's going to be warm. It's supposed to be like 82 tomorrow, which...
Ooh, bad ice?
Well, no, I wasn't even thinking about that, damn it. But I think, you know, we've talked before about how sometimes in the playoffs, losing badly can be better for your team than losing a very competitive game, an overtime game, those sorts of things. I am worried that the way Washington lost so decisively on Monday, they're going to come out and just maybe... maybe stop thinking. What I hope they do is I hope they overthink it and try to tweak too many things as opposed to playing more simply. Also, what I hope is going to happen is Aho will have coffee in the morning. I think the power play is going to continue to shoot a lot. I just hope we don't fall into the trap of taking retaliatory penalties like we talked about earlier with Ovechkin trying to goad Svechnikov into things. You know Brooks Orpik's going to try. You know Tom Wilson's going to do something stupid. You know Niskanen or Oshie is going to pull at somebody in front of the goalie, and let's hope our guys exercise some restraint. That's what I hope to see in the game tonight.
You know, Derek, you bring that up, and that reminds me of an amazing thing that happened Monday night when Peter Mrazek actually stepped in between and stopped that from escalating further. I think there's enough veteran leadership on this team. When you look at the lines, right, you've got Justin Williams, guy who's been there and done that. Jordan Staal, been there. Done that. Dougie Hamilton, been there, done that, even at the age of 25. I think even maybe Justin Falk, Peter Mrazek, a group of guys who have been there, done that, and can help kind of keep a lid on this thing.
By done that, though, what do you mean? Because, like, he has three games of playoff experience.
Right,
though.
But they've been goaded into this thing before, right?
Gotcha.
They've heard, yeah. I don't know if there's a lot of trash talk that you could talk about Justin Falk that he hasn't already heard.
Right. Also, I loved Dougie staying in Ovechkin's ear the rest of that game.
Yeah.
That was... I wish I know what was said.
So does Ovechkin, because most of it was probably in Canadian. it's probably somewhere Ovi's at home just watching YouTube videos of Letterkenny trying to figure out what the hell Dougie meant by everything that he said. I think
go watch Corner Gas or something.
I think Thursday night is going to be great. I think the Hurricanes are going to come out on fire. I think the team's going to continue to play for each other. Rod Brindamore is going to continue to get the matchups he wants, which is particularly Jacob Slavin and Dougie Hamilton out there against the Alex Ovechkin line, which has done a very good job. Again, 7 of 9 periods, I think, shutting those guys down. I think it goes back to DC 2-2, and we get a best of three series, and really some exciting things to go on. But rather than get our take on this thing consistently, because we know we're going to win, why don't we take a trip up 95, let's go inside the Beltline, and let's see what the folks up in DC think. Derek, permission to treat tonight's guest as a hostile witness.
I think if the head is not the principal point of contact, we're not doing any justice to this series.
Well, here's the problem. If I make principal point of contact with the head, the National Hockey League will come back and be like, no, that's fine. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome. First-time listener, first-time caller, but somebody who we've got a lot of respect for from Japers Rink, the SB Nation blog covering the Washington Capitals, Greg Young, joining us here on Cheaters Never Win. Greg, thanks for a little bit of your time tonight, man. How are things in D.C.? How are the D.C. fans feeling after Game 3?
Yeah, I mean, it's actually funny. As I'm sure you're aware, the Capitals have, before last year, kind of a bit of a mixed playoff history. And so there was definitely a little bit of panic. There was one of the NBC sites for the team actually wrote one of their mailbag questions was basically, "Don't panic, it's going to be okay." So it's kind of hardwired in Caps fans to panic a little bit. But you know, I mean, look, like we won the Cup last year, and you know, I think that definitely is kind of affecting things at the margin. Although you know, playoff hockey, as I'm sure you guys are now definitely acquainted with a little more thoroughly, it definitely can kind of bring the ups and downs a little bit for us. So, you know, I think a little nervous, but, you know, we'll see what happens tomorrow.
So a couple things that are interesting this year with the Caps, you know, people always think of them as an offensive team, and that's maybe changed over the years with Trotz coming in and now Reardon here, and the Capitals have been a lower volume shot team, but they were really, really struggling to get anything on net in Game 3 against the Canes. So what do you think is going to change going into Game 4 from how Washington might approach it?
Yeah, so I think that there's, and that's interesting, and it's interesting because we were on the site kind of talking a little bit about how that might have been one of the worst Capitals playoff games we've seen in a long time, and we're talking about a team that we got a lot like 8 years ago. So that was a rough game, and I mean, I first off, like, before I kind of go into what I think the Caps want to do, you know, I think that the Carolina, you guys have been really, really, really impressive. I wrote a couple of weeks ago, I kind of ranked the teams that I wanted to play, and you guys were the team I definitely did not want to play. And, you know, that had a little bit of pushback, but I don't think that that pushback is as existed now that we've kind of seen kind of the full wrap of what you guys could do. So, you know, I think it's definitely, you know, credit to you guys. You guys have played, I think, a really strong three games, and the Caps, I think, are very lucky to be up 2-1. In terms of what I think the Caps are going to do, they've changed up the lines a little bit. There was reporting that they're going to bump TJ Oshie up to the first line, which is interesting because I think he's been kind of non-existent this series, and as has basically any of the Capitals' depth. But, you know, so I think that'll be interesting to kind of see how he plays with Oshie, with Backstrom and Ovechkin, you know, and then we're going to kind of see any effects on the lineup will be interesting. They're also bumped Andrei Burakovsky up to the third line, which is something that I think a lot of fans have been advocating for. He was maybe going to get traded at the deadline, and since then he's actually been pretty good. So, you know, I'm kind of curious to see what he can do with maybe some more offensive players. But, you know, I think that a big thing that the Caps are going to really emphasize, I would imagine, is going to be depth scoring. I would say the Caps, the first line in Game 3 was maybe one of the only lines that I think had any kind of serious threat. And so, you know, you figure that they're going to try to, you know, get the first line a lot of minutes, but at the same time, they need to get better depth scoring. And I think that it's going to be, you know, interesting to kind of see how the Caps try to play that with, you know, Svechnikov and Furland out. So I think that's going to be kind of interesting to see how Reardon tries to make those matchups happen, particularly on the road.
And, you know, one of the things that's interesting, you guys are without, you know, kind of a key cog there in Kempney. And I think that's been a little bit evidenced as we, you know, the Canes have walked away with a Corsi Cup in the first three games of this. Unfortunately, you got to win 16 games to win that Corsi Cup. So being as pinned in as you're in your back end that you guys have been, you know, I look at this from a statistical standpoint, you know, Canes have kind of won 7 of 9 periods. Unfortunately, those two periods that we lost were, you know, horrible 3-0 periods where we weren't able to come back from that. Do you foresee any change by Reardon on the back end of the way that he's trying to exit the zone so that way you guys can try to retilt the ice back in the Caps' favor?
Yeah, and it's interesting you mentioned that because I know that we've kind of discussed a lot in the Caps community about how to make the adjustments without Kempney, because obviously losing Kempney is difficult, but I think it's difficult for a couple of reasons. You know, one is that he's a good puck-moving defenseman, and that's, you know, something that the Caps haven't really done a great job of, you know, in general. And but number two, kind of the different downward effects that can have on the lineup. You know, that draws Christian Jews into the lineup again, and he is – just, I think, had an awful Game 3, was, you know, had several turnovers and, you know, was definitely kind of, you know, was really struggling, but it forced him back in the lineup. And so, and it also forced, kind of through a strange decision Reardon made, he decided to place Carlson on his offside and play him with Jensen, which I think is kind of mitigated, you know, John Carlson, that I would argue has had a Norris caliber season. And I think that really mitigated some of his biggest strengths, you know, by forcing him to kind of play with one hand behind his back. So I think that it's going to be interesting to kind of see whether he jiggles the defensive pairings after a period or two. But kind of systematically, I would say that they have to be quicker out of the zone. And they have to – I mean, you guys have done a really good job in terms of getting in on the forecheck. And when the tackles are really rolling, they're able to make kind of simple passes. Jensen is someone who does that particularly well since he's come over. So I think kind of making quick, smart decisions in their own zone, and then, you know, getting the puck to the forwards and allowing them to kind of carry, maybe let some of our speedsters like Brana and Kuznetsov, just to fucking allow them to enter the zone, I think it's going to be something that I would keep a little bit more of an eye out, just to, you know. So I think ultimately making smart, quick decisions with the puck is going to be crucial for the Caps. And whether if they have to rejiggle the defensive pairings to do so, then, hey, you got a coach, you got to do so.
Gotta love a good rejiggling. I love the gamesmanship that happens in a playoff series, and I thought Holtby's quote after Game 3 was some phenomenal playoff gamesmanship, but I want to get your thoughts on how comical or just eye-rolling it is for Holtby to say Svechnikov is a guy who takes a lot of cheap shots when he has guys like Orpik, Ovechkin, Wilson, Niskanen on his team.
Hey, Wilson, what did he get nominated for again today? It was the Clancy or something?
Yeah, and we tweeted that, and like, what is this, a very belated April Fool's? And then someone pointed out, like, no, Wilson actually does do a lot of really nice stuff off the
ice. No, that's fair. He does. So, you know, and I think that's obviously kind of more a little bit what that, at least the Capitals logic and what that award is about. But, yeah, you know, I think that it's interesting. There's obviously the Brendan Moore quote, you know, from yesterday about there was a side to it that the media wasn't hearing. So I think it's always kind of fun to see the quotes and all the various chirpings and stuff like that. I take it a little bit with a grain of salt. You know, I think that obviously the Caps are, you know, a bit veteran at this, you know, in terms of kind of getting in people's heads. And so I would imagine Brendan Moore's message is probably to tune that stuff out as much as they can. But yeah, you know, it was definitely an interesting thing, I think, for Holtby to say, you know, particularly given kind of the what happened to Svechnikov. And obviously, you know, I think I speak for hopefully every single Caps fan when I say that I hope he has an extremely, extremely quick recovery. You know, that was obviously a very scary injury. And so it's something that, you know, I really, obviously, best wishes from pretty much everyone in the Caps community about what happened.
Well, we greatly appreciate that. And we look forward to Andrei Svechnikov's Bill Russell-like return in Game 6 at home
to close out the series.
Too.
I love that, too. He's a good, fun, young player. I hope he gets that return.
The joke that I made is, you know, this was the series for Ovechkin to hand off the Russian torch from himself to Svechnikov. We just didn't think he was going to hit him directly in the jaw with it.
That was a little surprising. I mean, Ovechkin hadn't gotten to a fight, by the way, since 2010.
You may not know this about Alex Ovechkin, but he has what we refer to in the business as dad strength. Never fight a guy with dad strength. We're going to go ahead and call it. Canes are going to win game two at home and hold serve on home ice. What has to happen in game five for the Caps to reclaim kind of their advantage? Are the matchups in this series that important in such a way that Reardon and Brendan Moore can drive the matchups they want, you know, forward versus defenseman? Is it going to be kind of that first lucky goal to break, or is this going to be someplace where home ice has been so important everyone's going to hold serve and you think the Caps are going to take it?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. So, you know, obviously the assumption that they win game four is going to be, because I think the Caps will make adjustments in game four. So it's going to be kind of interesting to see how game four plays out, particularly going into the later parts of the series. But, you know, I think that home ice matters. I think it matters to the Caps in the sense of it just didn't seem like they were up for game three for whatever reason, you know. And I think that really there's been large stretches of play where I think the Caps don't seem like they're awake, and it's kind of strange. You know, I think that maybe they didn't have the respect level for Carolina that Carolina deserves. And I think it's, you know, when you've done it the year before, maybe you kind of, the attention level varies a little bit. But yeah, you know, I think that.
Or kind of like when you win the President's Trophy and, you know, you just get swept.
Yeah. I was actually at game three in Columbus for that Tampa Columbus series. And that place was freaking rocking. I was stunned about how great that crowd was. So, I think the hope for me as a Caps fan is you see the Pens and Lightning get swept by, you know, Columbus is good, you know, and the Islanders are the Islanders. They're a very trusted team. But, you know, you hope that, like, the Caps see that and they kind of wake up a little bit. You know, they're I think that was definitely prevalent because the Caps played the day after Tampa blew that 3-0 lead in game one. And you know, I know that there were some quotes in the locker room from the Caps saying, you know, they're definitely that series kind of got their attention. So, you know, you hope that there's a little bit more of a motivation level. I also again hope that like Reardon it's going to be interesting to see the kind of adjustments he makes in terms of zone exits and see if they can do anything on the power play, because really since the first period of game one when you guys had the kind of interesting decision to leave Alex Ovechkin alone, which, and I mean, but since then you guys have done a really good job, I think, on the penalty kill of really pressuring the puck handler, and that's something that John Press from our site has been urging, including on a podcast yesterday. He doesn't get why teams don't do that more, and you guys have done that really effectively. So I think I'm going to be interested to see if the Caps maybe have a new wrinkle or two in the power play. I've been kind of advocating a little bit for TJ Oshie to maybe not be the guy in the middle of the power play, maybe try to see if you can find someone else who can do that role or maybe enter it with a little speed. So that's going to be something else I'm looking at, seeing if the Caps can maybe make an adjustment or two on the power play, particularly if they're going to play at home and inside.
Last question for me, and it pertains to food and beverage. So there may be some Canes fans driving up to D.C. for Game 5, especially since it's on a weekend. If they are in the nation's capital and have some time to kill, what is a place they should go to get some good local brew?
Okay, so that's a good question. So there is, and it's actually pretty affordable, there's a bar right near the stadium. It's called Rocket Bar. It's a little hard to find, but you can kind of go downstairs, and there's, it's actually a lot bigger than you think it would be, and they have a really good happy hour before the game, typically. There's a good kind of local crowd in there. Another bar that has a lot of beer, you know, and they have a lot of different local beers is, I mean, Kent Social is kind of a party place, but there's also a lot of kind of fun things to do around there. That's, I think, a block or two from the stadium. So both places I would definitely check out. Probably Rocket Bar would be my personal pick, as kind of a little low-key, but a lot of really cool kind of breweries, and they have some cool tables and stuff there too. So definitely worth checking out.
And Greg, what's your favorite local beer that if folks are looking for a good local brew?
Yeah, anything DC Brow does, I really enjoy. Yeah, I think they have a IPA, and I'm blanking on the name of it, but DC Brow is a really, really solid kind of local brewery. You know, I think Dogfish Head is technically from, like, the Virginia area. I could be wrong about that, but I know I see a lot of it. I'm not as big in Dogfish Head, but DC Brow definitely rock solid. So if you see anything from that, really good.
Excellent. Excellent, man. He is at GregYoung3. Obviously, that means the third, I'm assuming.
Yep.
Like either on Twitter, yep, or your generation.
One and two is taken. It was annoying. Yeah.
Annoying as hell. They are also at Japers Rink, Japers Rink. Make sure you're following them over on the Twitters. They are great guys. And Greg, we appreciate a little bit of your time to join us here on the Cheaters Never Win podcast. Worst of luck to your guys for the absolute rest of the series. And we look forward to welcoming you on the bandwagon in about 10 days.
All right. Yeah. If you guys beat us, then I'll be right on there.
Come on. No one wants to root for Barry Trotz. Come on. Two cups in 2 years.
Yeah, I know. Agreed. Like agreed. We're still a little bitter about it, but yeah.
Imagine. All right, man. Take care, yeah. Greg. Have a great night.
All right. You too. See you later.
Thanks, man.
Hey, big thanks to Greg, and again, at Japers Rink over on the Twitters. They do a nice job of covering the team. Again, if you're not following all of the Canes sites, whether it be, you know, the Redvolution Rampage guys, Canes Country, there's so many of them out there.
Calm Before the Storm.
Calm Before the Storm.
Canes Prospects.
Yeah, there's so many, but also Japers Rink, Russian Machine Never Break. There's a lot of good coverage out there on this that's not The Athletic, which is probably the best coverage that's going on by either side right now, particularly with our good friend Sarah.
As we are want to praise Jeff Merrick for saying this often, I still believe it. The more people that are talking about hockey, the better it is for all hockey fans, because you can find the voices or the writers that you wish to listen to or read, because you may take a liking to the way that someone writes, then we don't agree with them, but it's great that everyone's talking about hockey and you can find the coverage that you want.
Yeah. So thank you guys. Thanks to everybody out there who's putting in hard work covering this series, covering the National Hockey League. And again, thanks for Greg for taking 15 minutes out of his evening to talk with us. Derek, we're going to take a few hours out of tomorrow, maybe even take out of work, you know, maybe an hour early. Don't listen, bosses. We got a tailgate tomorrow. It's Thursday.
Yeah, buddy.
Folks have been asking. The end of season tailgate was crazy. the clincher, and then all of a sudden, you know, it's Monday, no one can get out of work, and we get into the lot, and gosh, there's 7,500 people at the tailgate on Monday, and all sorts of folks came by, so we tried to put a little planning into Thursday. It's not going to be a super early one. We should be out there around 4:30, 5 o'clock, but we've been able to talk some good friends of the podcast into joining us, most notably our good friends at New Belgium, Derek.
Yep, I have confirmed with New Belgium they will be bringing beer. Again, I don't know how much beer, and I would say if you're the type of person who wants to drink three or four before the game, bring some for yourself, because I don't think there's going to be enough for everyone to have three or four. But you'll be able to have a New Belgium beer that you probably didn't, or that you didn't pay for, so that's a good thing.
They assuming you're of age.
Yes, this is. You can go to section328.com, get all the details of where, who, what, all those things. We'll tell you in just a minute too, but we do take that part very seriously. New Belgium is bringing beer to share with everybody, and laws are laws, so if we don't know you and or you appear to be under 21, one of us is going to ask you for your ID.
Yep, you got it. Also, another good friend of the podcast, some of you guys may know him as Mike the Crazy Caniac from forever ago on a whole bunch of call-in shows, but Mike is now the catering manager over at Johnny's Pizza and Catering over in Apex. We weren't sure if we were going to be able to have a food sponsor for tomorrow night's tailgate. Mike, Crazy Caniac Caterer, came through. So Johnny's Pizza is going to be joining us tomorrow over on Twitter. They are at Johnny's Pizza NC. They're that on Twitter and on Instagram. They're going to bring out pizza. They're going to bring out some subs. I think they're bringing out some garlic knots. So, you know, if you have to get into, if you have to, you know, talk to a Caps fan, at least your breath should stink. You know, so that way they feel like, you know, they understand, you know, I feel like Caps fan understand garbage. If anybody out there does want catering, we wanted to give those guys a plug. Their email address is at Johnny's, Johnny's Pizza Catering at gmail.com. That's Johnny's Pizza Catering at gmail.com. That'll get you in to Mike the Caniac Caterer, and he'll take good care of you. Here's a better idea. Come out tomorrow or come out tonight for the tailgate, try some of the food, see how awesome it is. Mike's going to be out there serving, so it's not going to be like there's a bunch of food on a table, just go get it. Mike's going to be taking care of people.
Is he going to actually, like, feed us?
If I can get a video, like a Facebook Live of, yeah, like, Mike the Caniac Caterer feeding me, I mean, that's kind of everything, right?
I think so.
I mean, I think that's the love sponsors are looking for. Free food, free beer, great fans, great time. If you don't know anybody, still, you're welcome to come on out. Find one of us. Find anybody. Pat and Tom and Jack and Meg and everybody's going to be out there. Find somebody. They'll introduce you around. Great times are ready to be had as we all get together and prepare. And if you're going to properly prepare, and like Derek said, if you're going to bring some beers, maybe you want to go to Bottle Mix and grab some of those beers. But before we go to Bottle Mix, Derek, I gotta open up this octagonal
box. Oh, that looks nice.
Box. What's inside?
Ooh.
It's cheat mail. Cheat mail. Got to get some cheat mail because we're almost done.
All right. Oh, damn, I had some queued up here. We've talked about some of the fight stuff. PJT underscore Caniac, who respects the underscore. Thank you for your questions. I feel like we kind of talked about those a little bit. This question's so good, and I hate to start with it because it's so good, but thank you at the Edmund or that Edmund guy for this one. Who did we hate more immediately following their violent indiscretion? Ovechkin after fighting Svechnikov, or Hulk Hogan coming out heel as the third man in at Bash of the Beach 96?
Wow. This one's so hard because, again, how many times on this podcast have we said Alex Ovechkin is the greatest goal scorer, not only that we've ever seen, that has ever graced God's green earth? He is the greatest goal scorer of all time, hands down. He is a dirty, filthy, stinky, cheating player in the playoffs, and he punched the guy that I wear his jersey every game. Hulk Hogan, greatest that I grew up with. And then joined.
He was a real American, Mike. He fought for the rights of every man.
And, you know, he made sure that, I did my homework and I took my vitamins and all of that good stuff in the 80s. Beat up Roddy Piper. And then, you know, I'm out of college and I'm loving the heels. And then he joins those guys. It is Hogan. Because Hogan eventually killed WCW.
No, he was asking immediate reaction.
Oh, immediate reaction?
Immediate reaction.
Oh,
like,
Svetch.
That's the right answer. The immediate reaction.
But long term, Hogan killed WCW, what ultimately led to Vince being able to do whatever the hell he wanted to do, which led to like 7 or 8 really bad years in WWF. So if this long term goes that like this actually, you know, it is horrible for Svetch's career and there's a long term injury, then we might have a different
and conversation. And if Ovechkin spray paints NWO on the Stanley Cup, we have some real issues.
I'm immediately just going full mark on that.
Also, if you like this kind of conversation, check out our sister podcast, Cheaters Never Pin, Cheaters NVR Pin on Twitter.
Derek, this one from our buddy Al B. Hood. Al, hope you're feeling good, our brother. F. Mary Kill, 06 Cup winning crowd, this year's playoff clinching crowd, Game 3 crowd.
Al, thank you, and I hate you at the same time, because this, again, brings up a very painful moment that I was not at the cup clinching game. So I cannot properly evaluate this question. So, Mike, you tell me, what do I do with the Game 6 crowd? And then I'll answer with the other two, what I do to those.
Derek, you're single. The world's hottest partner, smartest partner, richest partner walks up to you and says, please, for the love of God, marry me. You marry that partner.
Okay, so I guess I'm marrying the Game 6 crowd.
Yeah.
Oh, no, that means I have to kill Monday's crowd.
Ooh.
That means I have to kill Monday's crowd because I'm pretty sure that a lot of people had a similar release to a good F as they did on 4-4.
You're probably right.
Because that, look, there's recency bias. And again, I wasn't in the building, but I think because of the relationships we've built with so many Canes fans and the 328 crew and all, like you talked about with other Canes podcasts and writers and tweeters, the hours that we've invested into a product that has been subpar at times and a hell of a lot worse than that at others, but made, you know, it's the friends we made along the way, right? But it really paid off in that moment of like, we get to experience something brand new together. And that was what was so beautiful to me about 4-4. So I'm going to F that one. And it is with many regrets that I have to kill the crowd from Game 3.
I'm going to flip it on you, but for just one reason. Monday night, I got to take my kid to his first playoff game. And the smile on his face, and, you know, he's 4, but he's been coming to this arena for, you know, every week since he was 6 weeks old. He told me, he goes, Daddy, tonight was different. He felt it. He knew it. We stopped. We took a few extra pictures. We had to bring him headphones for the first time since he was 2 because I knew what that crowd was going to unleash. So I like where you're going.
That's fair. I should have said that because my wife has put up more social media posts about that playoff game than any other Canes game she's ever been to. So thanks for making me look like a terrible husband.
You're not a terrible husband all the time, Derek. This one comes from at Kelly's underscore 022. Kelly Strusky, what's the likelihood of Calvin DeHaan coming back to this series?
I appreciate her respecting the underscore. So, Kelly, I would say it's 100% that Calvin DeHaan comes back this series.
Yeah, I think Calvin DeHaan plays Thursday night.
And if he's, you know, Mike talked about it when we spoke with him. Decent chance that if he plays, it's as a 7th defenseman. So someone can play up and he doesn't have to take the full brunt of those minutes. I would say it's probably about 100%. Mike, I got one for you from Nick Bailey at T. Nick Bailey. He linked to an NHL.com player survey from the beginning of the season where one player listed the PNC Arena as the hardest arena to play in. Which player do you think listed that? And why will the answer be anyone from the Caps team when that survey goes out next year?
I mean, you look at what happened and the energy that this team fed off of, that the crowd delivered it to. So even the Caps coach said that this crowd had an effect on both teams. So I'm, you know, lots of folks are going to say that. Who said that the building was the toughest to play in? I'm going to say Brooks Orpik because, you know, he hasn't been liked here for like the better part of 10 years. So maybe say Brooks Orpik.
I'm good with that.
Yeah. Derek, this one completely off the radar, but since we, you know, talked wrestling earlier, last one from this mic, at A. Floyd 66, the sir or the senior, for everyone on this episode, who's your favorite professional wrestler?
Okay, so Mike, there's two ways I could answer this. Current or all time?
He said your favorite professional wrestler. That will assume all time.
So it hasn't aged well, but as a youth, Bret Hart was my guy. I was a huge Bret Hart fan.
I could see that.
He's kind of, you know, proven to be a little bit of a D-bag after retiring, and I know he's had his health issues, but Bret Hart was my guy. He talked that he was the best, and he went out there, and he backed it up. Bret Hart was awesome.
Derek.
And he had cool sunglasses.
He did. I'm going to go against my better judgment here and give the truth as opposed to what I should see. What should I say? I should say that the man, the myth, the legend, the man that is 200 pounds of twisted steel and sex appeal, that limousine riding, jet flying, kiss stealing, Rolex wearing son of a gun, the pride of Charlotte, North Carolina, Ric Flair. Woo! But I won't. My favorite wrestler is John Cena.
You and your damn kid.
John Cena. Again, the reason John Cena is my favorite professional wrestler is the same reason I'm okay that Tom Wilson got nominated for the King Clancy. It doesn't matter what he does up there. It's what he's done with his life out of there that up there created. And what he created up there was a superhero that not only affected my kid, but tens of thousands of people in their life. John Cena, again, may not be a great guy, hasn't, you know, won't necessarily age well, but damn it if he hasn't been great to a lot of people. So, you know, it's kind of like this whole, I'm sure everybody's seen it who listened to this podcast, if they're a big sports fan. If you haven't seen it, go look it up. There's a Budweiser commercial about Dwayne Wade.
Oh, that was so well done.
That will absolutely just rip the onions out of your pantry and immediately make them start cutting themselves. Was not a huge Dwayne Wade fan up until that minute and regret not having spent more time paying attention to Dwayne Wade during his now illustrious playing career.
Yep. Okay.
Oh, wait. That was by Budweiser. Budweiser makes beer.
Ooh.
Beer is delicious. We have beer at tailgates. We have people who go and get beer at tailgates before tailgates. They generally get them on Creedmoor Road, a couple of miles north of Crabtree Valley Mall, about a mile south of 540, at a little place called
Aspen.
Bottlemix.
Oh, Bottlemix. Okay.
Yeah, Bottlemix.
Sorry. I thought you were talking where the women instinctively flock like the salmon of Capistrano.
Okay. No. We're talking about Bottlemix. Derek, this is the part where you would generally tell the folks about what's in that beautiful glass.
Yes. Sorry. I was looking up what events are coming up at Bottlemix. So today I am enjoying a beer, as luck would have it, from New Belgium. How about that? Synergy, Mike. I'm all about synergy tonight. And tonight I'm drinking their Passion Fruit Kolsch. So this is part of a series of beers that New Belgium is rotating in and out this calendar year of different flavors, different styles. And this is just designed to be an absurdly refreshing beer. They made the mistake, in my opinion, of calling it crushable. I think that word is tremendously overused by brewers right now to describe a beer that you could drink a bunch of without getting absolutely wrecked. But this one, they describe it, it's, it pours a bright pale yellow, I would agree with that description, with invigorating aromas of passion fruit, guava, and tropical punch. It's a medium-bodied beer. It starts a little sweet, then gets tart, and then ends bitter thanks to it having three different hops in there. What I like about this beer, and I believe this was one that was brought out in a limited quantity at the tailgate on 4-4, is, again, it's supposed to be warm tomorrow. You want a beer that's light, it's low alcohol, again 4.3%. It's got some nice fruit to it. It is very, very refreshing. It's not going to sit heavy. It's just the right balance of tart, sweet, and hoppy. So none of those flavors dominate where it's like, oh, that's too sweet, I don't want another taste, or it's too bitter, I need something to snack on right now. Perfectly enjoyable beer. I think it's going to be even better out in the sunshine tomorrow. It's a couple bucks a can or so. It's just it's a really good beer. So maybe you get to try it tomorrow at the tailgate. I'm not exactly sure what New Belgium is bringing today. Sorry. But head by Bottlemix. If you can't make it to Bottlemix before game 4 in the parking lot, I understand. We all have busy schedules. We're working. We want to get to the game or get home as quickly as possible. But you know what there is? There's a home, or there's an away game on Saturday at 8 p.m. That gives you plenty of time to go to Bottlemix. Ask them for some New Belgium passion fruit. Ask them for another beer that you like. Maybe you want a heavy stout. Maybe you want a great bottle of red wine and you're going to grill a steak and enjoy the game with a steak and a bottle of cab. Sounds pretty good to me. So go there, check it out. Bottlemix also has a bunch of events coming up. Let's see, they've got Sour Saturday all day this Saturday. They've got an Italy After Hours wine tasting coming up on Wednesday. An IPA tasting the following Saturday. All kinds of really cool events. Check them out. They're all over the social medias and on the internet. BottleMix. That's BottleMixx on the social media, and then just add a .com for it if you're, you know, using Google Chrome or any other inferior web browser.
Wow. Wow.
Sorry, I forgot you're a Netscape Navigator guy.
I am. I just go to AOL and use the AOL browser, and it takes me wherever I need to go.
If you're on CompuServe, just type in keyword BottleMix.
I'm 84 years old. Derek, it's been a fun episode.
I've had fun. I hope the people have had fun.
Yeah, this is what happens when you drink scotch all night. Yeah. All night. All night. At least we cover it well.
Honestly, did we leave anything out from our rundown? I think.
Games 1 through 3.
Oh, yeah.
Fight.
Other playoffs. Shout out to Columbus. I know we talked about a little bit with Maniscalco and with Greg, but for real, I'm not here to say ill things of Tampa because it's more fun to congratulate the team that won. So congratulations to Columbus, all the Blue Jackets fans who have never won a playoff series before. This is fantastic. And as a lot of people have said, in some way, this may make the 2020 trade deadline even better because Yarmo is being rewarded for going out there and getting players.
Yeah, this should teach us a little bit of something, but what it also teaches us is that the winner of the Canes Caps first round series is basically playing for the Stanley Cup.
You are really sleeping on that Boston Toronto series.
Who? Never heard of them. Derek,
two arbitrary six teams, Mike.
Exactly. Let's do our due. Let's head out to the East lot. Let's go set up the tailgate.
Mike, we have to work tomorrow.
Okay.
Today. Damn it.
Eventually. Let's greet some friends. Friends, come by. East lot, if you're listening to this podcast, this is your invitation. Join us. Get out there early. Traffic was a nightmare on Monday. It's only going to be worse tomorrow. So if you can get out of work a little bit early, get out there, come out, have a beverage. We'll have some waters and sodas around. We'll have the good folks at Johnny's Pizza serving us some great subs and pizza and all sorts of stuff. Then let's en masse. Let's go into the PNC Arena. Let's use the same force Thursday night that we used Monday night to will our team to yet another Stanley Cup playoff victory. One down, 15 to go. This team's not done yet. We'll be back here next week talking about Game 6.
Shucky ducky quack quack.
Until then, my name's Mike.
I'm Derek.
We're out of here.
Yeah!